think it would do.
I went to church early one morning in the Marriott ward.
And here was the Steiner boy across the street. He was running around like the devil was in him. No fooling. And he'd run around, and then he'd throw himself against the doors, some double doors there, with his feet, though. He would run and jump with both feet against the door. Destructive little beast. And that's why a lot of these country kids were. And I just was abhorred at such things. I thought it was awful.
Well, you know, that Stanger's son was my DL over in Germany on our mission. Good mm-hmm. missionary.
Well, the boy, maybe he grew up to be okay, too, but... let's see. Oh, my parents decided, as my mom, I don't think my dad wanted to do it too much, wanted to take us kids out on a farm where she thought it would be better. And it was in some ways, but in other ways, I think it was worse. The kids were dirtier mouthed on the farm than they were in the
city. And rougher.
And rough.
It's rougher.
And just sex all the time, as all those kids ever talk from the time they're 6 years old. Right on the farm. And they smoked and all did all kinds of things. The Stanger boy, his uncle or somebody, used to be a tobacco salesman. He got a whole wooden case of Chesterfields. And the swimming hole for the whole Marriott area was at the end of our farm. And of course, on the farm, you go swimming in the nude all the time. And then that's where they'd tell dirty stories and smoke cigarettes and all that kind of stuff. Well, these big boys, they get a hold of you, and even Gene and I, we smoked those cigarettes. And then we'd go eat onions to go home so your mother wouldn't know you'd been smoking. I hate to admit this. But I started to get worried. I don't know how many I'd smoked. I don't think I smoked very many. Maybe I'd smoked six of them over a period of a couple of weeks or something.
Wouldn't
I know.
Catch Coca-Cola.
My dad didn't tell me not to smoke. I guess he assumed I wouldn't. But anyway, I knew you could get the habit. And I started to imagine I had the habit. I'm sure I hadn't smoked enough of them to get the habit. And I didn't do it willingly anyway.
And it didn't make you sick when you first smoked?
I don't think I ever smoked enough to get sick. I was the kind of a guy that, you got all these big bullies around here, all these farm kids, you know, telling you to do it, and sitting around and you practically got to do it. You're socially really coerced into it. And I'm sure I would puff a little, you know, and then let it burn, that kind of a deal. But anyway, I got real concerned.
They
used to roll up manure, dried manure, you know, and smoke that, or bark from the tree, I don't know, all
Indian
kinds
tobacco,
of stuff. Indian tobacco, all those things, I'm sure I smoked.
Tobacco.
But I got concerned and guilty or something, and finally I got this one friend of mine, and it was a Dana kid, and I says, we're not going to smoke anymore. I don't care if they had this whole case of cigarettes. It must have been 24
Carton.
Times 10, probably a couple of hundred packages. And I think this Stanger kid had stolen them from his uncle's car or something. They were hidden in this hollow tree down by our swimming pool on the farm.
Sounds like Tom Sawyer, doesn't
Anyway, I got this Dana kid. I said, now, we're not going to smoke anymore. I don't care what these other guys do. We're not going to smoke. And he agreed with
swear
me.
Swear it in blood?
Yeah, so we pricked our fingers. Tom, I don't know where we got the idea, but anyway, we got blood, and we got a pen, and we wrote on a sheet of paper on this date, you know, Tracy Hall and Dana, well, it's Max Dana, we'll never smoke again as long as we live, and we each signed our names to that, and put it in a Bull Durham can and stuck it in a hollow tree. Wonder if it's still there.
Yeah, don't
think.
Probably
cut down. And I never smoked again the rest of my farm days, and the rest of those kids kept on going, and that Dana kid, he smokes to this day. So he didn't.
Oh, he didn't stick
by his
blood.
He didn't stick
by
it, but I did.
Well, I can remember when I was a little girl, once I asked you, I said, Daddy, did you ever smoke at all? Did you ever even try it? And when you said yes, oh, was I disillusioned. Because I thought you were perfect. How could my father have ever even tried? And then you told me about how you wrote in blood and you made a covenant and you never did it again, even though those big bullies were always after you. And then I decided you were a hero after all. but I can remember that.
Well, it's funny. I haven't tasted beer, I haven't tasted alcohol, I haven't tasted...
Pure coffee. Oh,
I tasted Coke, but I haven't really drank the Coke, but I have tasted it.
I remember one time I was at Woolworth, and I always had, the first day of my period was always rough. I usually have to go home and go to bed. I'm gonna publish this. I'm gonna make $1 million selling this bloody tape. And I was working at Woolworths as assistant manager.
We were on the tapes.
The second year when I should have been going to college, but I was training as a Woolworth manager. And I was so sick, I wanted to go home. And she says, "What you need is a good cup of tea." "No, I'm Mormon. This is medicine. It won't hurt you at all." And I said, "Oh, no. Get out on the other side of that counter." So I was on the other side of the counter. And Mrs. Mike, she was the kindest woman. Just the kindest woman. Everyone was scared to death of her, but she was just personification of kindness. And she brought me this cup of tea, and I just tasted it and just let it go, you know. Didn't drink it. But...
We always had tea in our house because my grandmother Tracy, being an old Englishman, drank tea to her dying day.
I used to love the smell of coffee. You know, we made it at Woolworths. You know, it smells so good.
It's interesting to me that none of the kids ever took it up. My mom and dad didn't either. But my grandmother Tracy died in 1933 at age about 83. Mom always had tea.
You
for
mean?
Her.
Emma Maria Burdett Tracy.
Well, she was a member.
Oh, yes.
And those
they didn't.
Some,
they didn't inform us.
That was
the
whole point of Heber J. Grant's administration.
Lots of those old Englishmen kept their teeth.
And they did. They didn't. They give you temper recommend. You,
yeah,
you could
that's
even,
right.
You
it
could even drink alcohol. Hard. It was choice. You do it or not.
Well, I remember now. Remember Grandma Hall when she transcribed Nancy Milne Alexander Tracy's diary. She crossed out
all of the tea and coffee. Yeah.
Because she changed her attitude.
Well,
and Daddy went and redid it and left it as
well,
originally.
Well,
but
church,
it wasn't a sin then.
Well,
so
the
much.
Church, yeah, when the immigrants came across the ocean, they were issued a ration of tea and coffee.
Yeah.
Part
well,
of their ration.
Speaking of that kind of thing, my grandmother Tracy must have lived with us for 5 years and perhaps longer, because I can remember about that many years. And
now your father was so kind.
And of all the 14 kids in my mother's family, my mother was the least well-to-do, and yet she took care of my grandmother. And my dad was always very kind to my grandmother Tracy. She was crippled. She died at age 83, and how long she'd been a cripple, I don't know. But she had lost the control of her bladder, for one thing. And my mother had to keep her in diapers all those years that I can remember because she...
No control at all.
I suppose they have appliances you can wear to collect that nowadays and whatnot, but in those days. So,
it must have been a real problem because you'd have all that bedding to wash.
Yeah, and I know my grandmother's room, she always had her own room in our house, always smelled
of urine.
And I can remember that one thing I regret to this day. I think of it on every occasion. Grandma would sometimes get a little stern at us and shake her cane at us, you know, for something we were doing as boys that she didn't like. And I remember she did that to me once, and I made some stupid remark back, something about, "You stink, Grandma," or something like that, you know. Which was terrible.
She hit you with that.
She sent us back to it.
Well, if she'd have reached me, she probably would have.
Now, who was this, Burdette?
This is
Emma Maria Burdette.
Now, describe her a little bit. What was she like?
Well, she was probably very good looking when she was young. She had nice features. My mother did, too. My mother was a beautiful woman as a young girl. Very refined, cultured English features.
She had high cheekbones, real high cheekbones.
And
deep set eyes. Whereas some of you kids get those deep set eyes.
What was her personality like, or did you just know her when she was old and sick, so you don't know?
Well, She died when I was 12 or 13. Unfortunately, kids don't pay as much attention to things as they should. I know she darned all our socks. I know she would sit here in her rocking chair and darn all the soaked socks and men's clothes. I know she did that kind of thing for all us five boys. Her rocking chair, the rockers were worn real flat because she'd have to be lifted out of bed into her rocking chair, and then she'd be pulled across the floor, you know. And
oh,
over
yeah.
a period of years, this rocking chair...
Probably scratched the floor, too.
...chair would... I remember those flat rockers. Her personality, I know, was pleasant. She was not stern. Oh, you know, this thing I mentioned, I probably was doing something that I deserved to be spoken
mm-hmm.
sternly to, but I don't remember her as a stern person.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the kid, her own children, particularly Uncle Harold, coming to see her once in a while. And Harold would leave her some money once in a while. He'd leave her $5 and he'd say, "Now, Mother, don't you pay tithing on this. I've already paid tithing on this." But she'd pay her tithing on it every time anyway.
He was the one that should have been taking care of her. He had the farm.
No, that was not Harold. That
oh,
was
no,
Helen.
That was
Helen.
Him.
Yeah.
Well, that was Helen. Oh, yes, Harold was the one in Idaho.
Harold
that came
Idaho.
And stayed and stopped.
Harold was the last of her children to die, and we didn't even learn that he had died until
yeah,
months
I remember
afterwards.
That. And his wife was living. They were living right out here
they
in
were
Orem
living here
at the time.
And we thought they were
we
living
didn't
in
even
Arizona.
Know. We didn't even know they'd come to Orem. Tell us about, well, you've told us a little bit about your childhood. What are some of your happiest memories?
The childhood?
Mm-hmm.
General things come to me right off. Maybe some specific things are with. Joe's swimming hole down on the farm. Man, the
cigarettes and all, huh?
Place on earth. Well, that was probably minor. It looms big because of our church's prohibitions against it. It may have been, I don't know how much. I just don't know how major it was.
Mm-hmm.
I may have only smoked a couple of those darn cigarettes. I don't know.
But anyway, it went against your conscience.
Yeah, I was real bothered about it.
How about when the boys tried to drown you?
Well, yeah, sometimes the big boys would get hold of Gene and I and hold us under until we just thought we would die.
Mm.
But I can remember two incidences of that. But other than that...
When the big boys went around, how great.
Really great. Old swimming hole. Very pleasant memories of ranging around the country. It's a good thing my mother never asked me where I was.
Yeah, his mother gave him an awful lot of freedom.
I walked
I
over
do it myself.
The whole north end of Weber County.
You
I knew every.
Home at a certain time.
Yeah, I knew where all the swamps were. I knew the shapes of all the farms, where the trees were.
Especially where the junkyards were.
Yeah, I knew the whole works. And then after I got a bicycle, I expanded my area, and I just knew everything, where everything was. Probably had some narrow escapes with death. Ice skating. Oh, I loved to ice skate when I was a kid. Never did have a good pair of skates, though. The skates were hand-me-downs from somebody, and the bottoms were always rounded. And so, you know, it wouldn't bite into the ice good. I never owned a new pair of skates in my life. Always somebody's... because they were not sharp any longer, you know, rounded.
Nancy, you're missing some good stories.
But we could get on the irrigation ditch near our farm and skate maybe a couple of miles down that irrigation ditch and onto an old swamp which covered acres and acres, and you could just have the time of your life skating down there. And the kids would build a big bonfire on the ice at night. And
it was colder when we were kids.
I think that was the... One of the things I liked best when I was a kid was ice skating. But I can remember a time when Max Dana, who was a young red-headed kid about my same age, we sort of took to each other.
Well, this is the one you made the pact with
yeah.
on gas tobacco.
we went skating down there.
Oh,
now, kids will do bad things to you. They will egg you on into dangerous things, you know. And we skated down there, and I suddenly noticed the ice was kind of bouncy. And golly, the ice in that area was... this thick lots of times, but we'd got out to where it was thin. And I was a little scared, but this kid He knows all about ice. Oh, nothing matters without ice, you know. Just keep going, just keep going. He stands there egging me on. And I went out, and the ice started to crack. But I turned and came back, and it didn't break on me. But I'm sure that was just on the hair's edge of breaking and letting me into that. And knowing those country kids that day, and a kid probably wouldn't even risk his neck to try to, even though he's my friend, to rescue me. Those farm kids, they were funny.
I've seen boys do this in our own ward. I mean, not on this major a thing, but if the situation had been the same, they wouldn't have hesitated to egg the kid on into danger.
There was quicksand in these big swamps. There are huge swamps out in Marriott. It's low-lying land. Tremendous swamps. There was a Stanger boy who got caught in quicksand in one of these swamps and lost his life.
Really?
Yeah, back before we ever moved to Marriott. And one of the Stanger boys, I was out exploring one of these swamps with him one time. And he had me, we had got way out on peninsulas and islands that wander way out around. The Stanger kid says, "Now let's not walk all the way back, let's take a shortcut across the swamp."
Was he the brother to this one?
Yeah, but he knew about this. I didn't know about it at that time. So we took off our clothes, you know, and held him above our head, and then he tells me to go first, you know. So I go first ahead of him through this swamp. And then, when we get across, he tells me, how you go first, because I was wondering if there's quicksand there. You know. Bounders!
But
we're in the area. His own brother had died in quicksand in that same swamp. It's a huge swamp. It goes all over the place.
I think your mother must have been praying hard during those years.
I don't know. She had nerves like I, and yet she was really... my impression was that she was really quite a nervous person. I don't see how she could stand it. The kids just had all kinds of freedom. They never had to be home at any time for supper or anything.
He must have been had to be home for supper, but I don't ever remember being scolded for not being. But we had tree houses and trees to climb and big swings and... The farm was really neat for kids, no doubt about that.
Well, tell about your junk heap. You used to tell me.
But knowing you, if your mother had known your inquisitive nature, she should have been worried all the time.
Well, we had, I guess I was kind of scientifically inclined to a very early age. I know things fascinated me at a very early age. I probably had firecrackers at age 6. And this was on 15th Street.
I inhibited you a lot more than his mother.
My earliest remembrances of having an inquisitive kind of scientific mind go back to about age 5 or 6. And I had firecrackers. I don't know where I got them.
Hey, this looks good, Nancy.
But it wasn't enough for me to just shoot off a firecracker. I found a chunk of pipe. And I put this pipe in the dirt. This was on 15th Street. And then I would stick the firecracker in the end and light it and bang it down to the end with a stick and then quick put in a rock. And I had a cannon, see? And I can remember my grandmother at that window.
Which grandmother?
Window, Tracy. Hollering at me to cut that out. That was too dangerous. That's my earliest recollection of a scientific experiment. But then when we got out to the farm, we moved at the farm at age 7. My age was 7. We'd go into town. I can remember the winter times. I guess we did it with a wagon in the summertime. We didn't have a transportation. Town was 5 miles away. I can remember my dad and I, and sometimes Eugene, walking the Union Pacific Railroad tracks from 12th Street into town to get 2 weeks' supply of groceries. We'd pull a sleigh, pull them back home on a sleigh in the wintertime and a wagon in the summertime. But my dad would always take me to the library. I don't know whether he suggested it or I suggested it. But anyway, I'd go to the library and check out a scientific book. And then 2 weeks later, we'd take it back. And I can remember...
What kind of books would Gene get?
Well, Gene liked Robinson Crusoe.
He liked the literature.
Yeah, he liked literature. But I get scientific books. And I can remember getting...
Every book in the library.
Getting books. Thanks, Nancy. That were beyond me. I just could not comprehend those darn books. Later on, when I got to college, I recognized that they were calculus.
Wow.
But I read what I could and got attracted to the practical things, like I read about crystal radios and things like that. My first job at which I made money that I can remember was in Marriott.
Well, tell them where you got some of your parts.
Yeah, I get the line. Was weeding beets for Mr. Dana. And I got paid a quarter.
A quarter what? A day?
Mm-hmm.
A quarter a day.
And then later on, I can remember Eugene and I hoeing weeds in the garden for Mr. Morris at 25 cents a day. And we hoed for a Mr. Hansen, an old Dutchman, for 25 cents a day. Boy, was his land hard and rocky and dry.
It's like our pacing time.
But later on, we would pick beans and things like that. And I can remember my first $10 in a jar was $8. Didn't make it to 10.
25 cents a day?
Mm-hmm. In silver dollars. And I remember a jar in Grandma's room with my $8 in it. Well, when I started to get a little money, I'd read these books in the library, and I was attracted to photography and to trying to build radios. And I can remember doing both. I don't know which came first. But I went to a drugstore and wanted to know where you buy these chemicals, you know, that talked about to use in photography. And the drugstore man was smart enough. I guess he'd had some chemistry. He says, well, we don't have that kind of stuff, but there are places in town where you can buy these chemicals. And he'd send me to photography stores to get those. So I was developing pictures out on the farm probably at age 10 or so. And I think I built my first crystal. Photography probably came second. My first crystal set was age 12. Maybe not. Maybe 10. But I got enough money to buy a pair of earphones, which cost me about $1.50, and a piece of galena crystal and whatnot. So the first radio we ever had on our farm was my crystal set. But they had junkyards out there over by the, on the way to Wilson, the road to Wilson Lane, between Wilson Lane and Marriott, across the Weber River where it joins the Ogden River. And this is where Captain James Brown once had his cabin. Very early historic spot.
That's
the
really
Indians
the
used to hold
Ogden.
Peace treaties
That's
and whatnot
where
right
first
there.
Settled
it. Well, people would dump junk in the river right at that point. So I'd go down and find junk. Well, one day I wandered off on a side street and I came to where they'd broken up a lot of slot machines. Used to try and gamble in those days. Even the country store in Marriott had a gambling device in it, a pinball machine.
Or against the law.
Yeah. But the sheriffs had confiscated several of these machines and smashed them with sledgehammers down there. And they had more neat junk in them. And I've been collecting junk ever since then.
Down the chest. Well, tell about how, wasn't it on that junk heap that you decided you were going to work for GE someday? Since I remember an old story.
Well, we had a wonderful teacher. Marriott School, I started the third grade. The third, fourth, and fifth grades were in the same room.
You never went to kindergarten or first, sister, second grade?
They didn't have kindergarten.
Went to first and second grade at Mount Fort.
Oh.
At the head of 12th Street on Washington Avenue. But I really liked this teacher. What was her name? Miss... should never forget her name. Miss Stallings. S-T-A-L-L-I-N-G-S. And I liked the setup because in the third grade you could listen to what was going on in the fourth and the fifth. And
why, it was all one class?
Mm-hmm. Well, the teacher, yeah, it's all in the same room. Two rows, about 6 to 10 kids. I was in the largest sixth grade there ever was in Marriott. I had 13 kids in the sixth grade. But I don't know, a total of maybe 25 kids in that room. Third grade on the north, fourth grade in the middle, fifth grade on the south.
And what school was this?
Marriott.
Marriott
School. Four-room schoolhouse.
The little tiny four-room schoolhouse.
And in those days, they didn't worry about whether some kids, you know, were smarter than others, and they didn't try to hide it. The smartest kid would sit in the front seat. I always sat in the front seat. They did the same in Mountport. But I really enjoyed the third, fourth, and fifth grades. Now, I was little, but I was fast. I could run real fast. And I loved baseball. I really loved baseball when I was a kid. We played hardball in Marriott. None of this sissy softball stuff for us. We played hardball. The principal was a nice guy. Floyd Barnett was his name. And he would hold extra long recesses and stuff like that. We really thought he was great. During ice skating season, we would flood the baseball diamond and skate at school. Supposed to be a 15-minute recess, he'd extend it to an hour some days.
That's kind of
easier.
But baseball was really my favorite sport, but the other kids would take advantage of me. The system, you know, you'd play workup most of the time. Not enough for two kids for two teams. Do you know what workup is? One guy at bat, and you rotate around. Well, the system they had the bell in that day, you know. They'd ring the bell and everybody'd line up on the front walk, and then they'd play on the old Victrola phonograph there, not electronic, you know, big horn. And then everybody would march into the schoolhouse. You'd do that in the morning and you'd do it every recess. And you'd march out the same way. And then the principal would blow the whistle, and then everybody would run for the backstop. And the first guy to backstop would be the first guy up. Now, this was first grade to ninth grade. I could be the first guy to the backstop in the fifth grade. I could beat the ninth graders there. And so every day, the kids would arrange to have the big bruisers hold me back so I wouldn't be the first one up to bat. And I was good, too. I hit every time up to bat, I'd hit a home run. That's just only a slight exaggeration. I was just automatically good at baseball all the time. But darn guys, they wouldn't let me. They'd hold me back. They'd pull all kinds of tricks like that on me. Well,
they weren't going to have that smart kid beating them in the sport.
I was already smarter than them. They used to really pick on me for that.
Well, I thought you told me a story that you had to hide in the register. No, I had the impression that you weren't necessarily always so well known. That there was one teacher who didn't even know your name when you took
the test. That was high school. That was high school.
And well, what about the story about some mean teacher beating your knuckles because you were late?
That was second grade.
Oh, tell that story.
Well, I don't know how come, but I'd wet my pants that morning, and my mom was real mad at me.
Probably had one pair of pants.
Yeah, and I remember trying to get them dried out so I get to school on time. Well, anyway, I got to school late. Well, in those days, they don't ask you how come you're late to school. I'd probably been too embarrassed to tell her anyway. But so I come in late. Stern old teacher meets you at the door, walks you over, and sticks you. You remember how those desks were like that?
Mm-hmm.
Sticks your hands on the front of the desk like that, and then she takes the ruler and whacks them.
Just one?
That's Mrs. Jensen. I don't know how many times, but she did enough that it hurt plenty.
Is that the only time you ever got corporal punishment?
Well, no, I got it one other time from my favorite teacher, Mrs. Stalling, and it was not corporal punishment, but it was just...
What did you
do? Well, the rule was you couldn't chew gum in school, but kids would do it anyway. Well, I didn't. I couldn't afford to buy gum. I had better things to spend my money on anyway. But, is that raining?
It's Nancy's still out. Why don't we close that door? I think it's making a lot of noise.
Well, some of the kids
then.
Had been chewing gum in Miss Stalling's class, and this was fifth grade now. And one of them was one of the Slater boys. Let's see, what was his name? Alma Slater. And she took him up to the front of the class, and she made him put the gum on the end of his nose. And he was standing there with the gum up the end of his nose. And of course, all the kids were down there snickering at him, including me. And so I started to mock him, and I was going, you know, you got that for chewing gum. You ought to know better. And the teacher saw me, and she thought I was chewing gum.
And thought you swallowed it.
And she came down and gave me the Dickens, my favorite teacher. I was heartbroken.
Serve you right.
Well, I want to tell you about baseball. I was out in left field one day, and a kid hit a long fly ball out in left field. And the shortstop in front of me was a guy named Clyde Hipwell. And, you know, we caught those hard baseballs with our bare hands. I never owned a glove in my life. But old Clyde, he had a glove on, and this is a long fly, and he was shortstop, and he held his hands up there, and he said, "I'll get it, I'll get it." Well, that was a long, hot one, and I didn't want to catch it barehanded, and so I just figured, well, yeah, he's right in the line of it anyway, so I let him get it. And he says, "I'll get it, I'll get it." And so I turned my head like that, figuring he would get it, and I ducked down. I let it come by, and it hit me right smack in that ear, and I've been somewhat deaf in that ear ever since. And that ear, for weeks, just hurt. Parents never took you to a doctor in those days. They couldn't afford it, but that ear hurt so much. I was in a play, and we had a play practice that very night, and it was just painting me something terrible. And that night wasn't a very good night. I was a Dutchman, a little Dutch boy, and we were in some kind of a dance. We used to put on school operettas every
year.
You've
got a picture about that, haven't you?
I think so.
Oh, that was a darling costume.
And anyway, we were going along doing some kind of a dance where we kicked, and I kicked out one of the footlights. And
you had a bad day that day.
I was really conscientious in those days. I thought if you damage something, you ought to pay for it, you know. I guess I've been brought up that way, so I was really feeling bad, and I told the teacher, "Well, how much is this going to cost me?" And I was crying because my ear hurts so darn much. And you don't have to pay for it, the teacher said. That part was good, but later on I got hurting so bad that the teacher could see something the matter and asked me what was the matter, and I told her, and she sent me home. But I'm still a bit deaf in that ear ever
since
then.
Broke your ear down.
Let me tell you another thing about sports. Football. Well,
oh,
I was really too... Oh, boy.
I
was too little for football. It took big bruisers to play football. But some of these big, mean, dumb country kids were always out to take a little guy and crush him, you know.
Crunch.
And they decided to let me carry the ball this day.
That's why he learned how to run
so fast. They go let me carry the ball, you know. I'm going to be the big old quarterback hero. Well, I knew what they had in mind. They were just going to murder me, you know. But you know what I did? I took that ball, and I dodged every guy that came after me, and I made a touchdown. And so they figured, you know, it's just luck. So... they're going to let me carry the ball again. This time they're really going to match me. And I missed every player and made a touchdown the second time. And then they wouldn't let me play quarterback anymore.
Oh, but they hated you.
Two touchdowns in a row. I tell you another thing about my athletic prowess. This Alma Slater was quite a bit older than I was, but he wasn't too smart a kid, and he was in the same grade. There were a lot of dumb kids who were about two or three grades behind. He started telling me one day how you run a race. He says, "Well, I want to tell you how you win a race." We were out in a field down near the pea vinery, and he says, "Now, what you do," he said, "you start out going slow, you know, and you go just like this. And then you get about two-thirds of the distance, and then you let it all out. Then you really run, you know. And that's the way you win, by going slow at first, and then you go fast at the end." He says, "Now I'll show you. We'll run this race." So he says, "We'll run from here to that telephone pole." And I says, "Okay." And so he says, ready, set, go. So I lied out just as fast as I could run right from the very start, and I kept up the speed all the way to I got the telephone pole. He started out slow, you know, he's going to show me how to run this race. And here I was getting on him all the time, but he knew he's going to win because he was doing this right, you know. But when he got about halfway there, and I was already the telephone pole. That was one of the funniest things I ever did in my life. I knew he was all wet. I mean, that might have been fine if you're going to run for a mile, you know, but we're only going to run for a couple hundred feet. and there's another thing where I was pretty sharp, too, when I was there. These big country bruisers, they're always proud of their brawn, you know. And they had what they called girls' bats in those days and men's bats. And I was such a little kid, I could hardly lift a man's bat, the great, you know, little handle, this great big thing on the end. But this is the way you hit home runs, you know. You took this big, huge, heavy bat and you hit the ball with that, and that's the way you hit home runs. They always call me a sissy because I go over and pick up the lightweight girl's bat.
That's always what
I could hit a home run with those. But you know, it's a problem of kinetic energy. And the Major League Baseball, I discovered this on my own just as a young kid. But within the past 20 years or so, Major League guys have found that you want to use a light bat. See, your kinetic energy is one half the mass times the velocity squared. Sure. So the faster you can swing the bat, you gain by the square, see? But the heavier the bat, you only gain to the first power by the mass. Now, I didn't know this, but I discovered it as a practical matter, just as a kid out in Marion. So those big old country bruisers were all wrong again. The lightweight bat was the one to be using.
They used to do all the time. They'd go and lift one bat, and they'd have to, you know, when the batter'd come up, they'd go lift another one, have it, put it up here, and he'd go like this, you know. Finally, he'd choose his bat and go over and up to the thing. Then he'd sit here like this.
You know, though, I was pretty good at broad jump, and when we'd have contests around, I'd always run and do the broad jump. But I was thinking I was pretty good. I sure was good in Marriott anyway, but they had a countywide field day one day at Lauren Farr Park. Remember, that's where they had the races and the end of the year field
Everything
day.
Everything was at Lauren Farr. That was the big...
And they entered me in the broad jump from Marriott and in the races because I was the fastest runner. And golly, I ended up last. So I was pretty good in Marriott, but there were some other guys from North Ogden and Taylorsville and Plain City that were a lot faster than I was. That was a real shock to me because I thought I'd place up there with them somewhere, but I was last.
Out there with the farmers. You know, bruisers, and they're never
fit. Oh, those are good stories. Tell about the time in high school when that lady didn't know your name and you won that NASCAR or whatever.
No, that's Mr. Peterson. I was just quiet. I never raised my hand in any class. They knew me in Marriott because the classes were so small. But when I was in a history class at high school, just one of 50 kids, I'd never raise my hand to answer a question. I'd just sit there and mind my own business. And somehow, towards the end of the class one day, this Mr. Peterson, who was a very socialistic liberal type, pointed his finger back at me and says, "You there, somebody, you did some lousy score on the last examination and you ought to do something." Anyway, he scolded me, you know. And it was obvious to me he didn't know what my name was, but I didn't help him out. I just, so what?
Well, that
you didn't go up afterward and tell him?
No.
And what'd you get in the course, eh?
I don't think I got an A. I probably got a B.
No, that's not the story. I heard a story.
Oh, you're referring to that time when he took the test.
You won the contest.
No, he took the test and ran the high.
That was
when he was a little tiny guy.
You know,
then.
And the guys came. Yes. And the smart kid wasn't.
Well, this is Miss Darling's class again. They gave a countywide intelligence test. Probably back in, this would have been 1928 or 1929. And, you know, we used to wear overalls and a blue shirt of some kind of school. We didn't wear underpants in those days.
and barefooted most of the time. I don't know whether our mother let us go to school barefooted or not, but at home we were always barefooted. But I was real scrawny and skinny and unhealthy looking. They gave us a countywide intelligence test in the fourth grade, and I was at the median 13th grade level in all subjects, the whole darn works.
And
I was in the fourth grade, 9 years old, 8 years old.
You mean they had 13 grades in those days?
Well, they rated it.
I don't know. Anyway, I really rated high, the highest the county. And so the superintendent of the county schools and some of his cohorts came out to see what this weird creature was like, who was the smartest kid in the county in this test. And they got out there, they could hardly believe it, you know, this dumb, scrawny looking farm kid. And golly, they got me and they quizzed me, and they didn't tell me very much about the test, but they were so concerned about my health. What does your mother feed you? Don't you get eggs and milk? And anyway, they talked to my parents and told them they had to do something about me. You know, I was wasting away.
Well, do you think you were really undernourished?
Yeah. But,
he can remember time when all they would have for supper was stale bread and water.
Yeah, man, I can remember many a supper where you just heat hot water on the stove, you put in a level teaspoonful of butter, some salt and pepper, and then you toast your bread, and you pour that on your bread, and that's supper.
No, we used to do the same thing, but we had milk. It's called milk toast.
Well, we had milk toast too,
but because you didn't have the money to buy the stuff. Huh?
Well, depression, no job, no.
But
no
on
money.
The farm,
my mother
job.
Didn't have milk. She went out and got free skim milk.
Yeah. I don't know. We had a cow at times, but maybe the cow was, you know,
it
you
was
have
fresh.
To dry
they
them
call
up.
It fresh.
May not have been fresh.
It was having when it was having a calf. It would be fresh and would give milk. See, and then when it would come in again, the calf. We'd be real rich. You
I don't think my dad was a good farmer. That wasn't really his trade. I don't think he wanted to be on the farm. Really.
I don't think he found his trade till he was about.
I don't think he found his trade.
Five.
His trade was writing letters to
the senator.
Yeah.
He never did tell us how this Mrs. Stallings got you interested in GE.
Oh, well, that's fourth grade again, though. She asked everyone in the class. There are probably only 8 or 9 of us in fourth grade. What we're going to do when we grew up. I said, I'm going to be an engineer and work for General Electric. So I decided that pretty early.
But what made you think that?
I'd been reading books all about Edison and Ford. They were my big heroes. And Edison was the beginning of the General Electric Company.
Oh, well, I have this story. Maybe I got it twisted through the years. I thought when I was a little girl, in New York, you told me that you were sitting on the junk heap and you'd find all these neat GE things.
No, that's your only
on the junk heap.
Well, I don't know.
This is a story he told me a lot.
See,
I guess I heard it wrong.
Edison originally had his machine works at One River Road, Schenectady. One River Road, Schenectady, you know, they're on the Mohawk River, where the main General Electric Works is today.
Uh-huh.
And some high-powered financial man bought Edison out and started the General Electric Company. And Edison went on to East Orange, New Jersey later on.
And so you just, he was sort of a hero to you, huh?
Oh, real
and
big
so you
hero.
Wanted
me and
to
Henry
go
Ford, yeah.
Oh.
But I'd read about Steinmetz and all the other famous G guys.
Where did you get all these books?
The library.
Oh, library.
Morgan City Library, 28th Street and Washington Avenue. 26th Street in Washington.
Well, how did you get out to the library?
Walk.
Well, they lived.
5 miles.
They could always live at Marriott, you know. He didn't.
No, I didn't get to the library till we'd been in Marriott.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
We used to go.
There was nothing to walk 5 miles back in those days.
I think we'd go before we would go to the show, and we'd go get a whole bunch of books. I was always taking books. I think I read in the children's library, I think I read everything in the library. By the time I was in the seventh grade and decided it was time for me to move upstairs.
That's good. Well, yeah. We're about to the end of the tape. Do we have time for one more question?
No, you're going
to
have about...
You have time to say amen. You can have the other half of my tape, dear.
There's
no,
another,
we've got two more tapes. This is really good, though. This is...
Well, I told you it wasn't...
Hey, let me help make that a better X-rated deal. One thing they used to do to me is really embarrassing, but those country kids, you can't believe what they would do. And a favorite pastime of theirs, particularly if the teacher wasn't around, like the teachers had a day off or something, they'd haul me out behind the school, stretch me out, pull my pants down, and spit on me. And invite the girls to come and spit on me, too. And some of them would.
The girls?
Yeah.
Honestly.
That probably happened to me a half a dozen times while I was in Marion.
No wonder you have the shakes at night. Once in a while.
Oh, my word.
Country kids, well, maybe kids in general are that way, but I somehow had the feeling that those mean old country kids, they used to steal my bicycle, they used to break my bicycle, they tried
to
drown us.
You used to hide in the...
I became so...
Afraid.
Afraid, and they'd try and get me in fist fights with big guys, and I was just little.
So he'd be mad.
And I would climb up, and every night, there'd be times I'd climb up a pipe in a shaft in the school. It's the only place I could hide, and I'd hang up there on that pipe for half an hour till the big bullies went home, and then I'd sneak home through the fields.
Did you tell your mother about these things?
I don't think so.
She would have just...
You know, you don't tell your mother about some of these things. I had trouble with the teacher in the fourth grade. I never told my mother, and I had nightmares over that teacher. When a teacher gets onto a kid, I think it's exaggerated, I'm sure, in the child's mind. But it was just that fourth year...
I never did win a fight. I might have won one. They always used to get Irving Stanger, who weighed a lot more.